Welcome to the December 2009 podcast for Neurosurgical Focus. I'm Natalie Pinchem. The theme of this issue is radiosurgery, and the interviewer is topic editor Nada Parachian at the Department of Neurosurgery, David Geffen School of Medicine at University of California, Los Angeles. Joining Dr. Parachian are Drs. Alberto Franzin and Carlo Serra of the Department of Neurosurgery and Radiosurgery, Division of Neuroscience, IRCCS, San Raffaele, Milan, Italy. Their article is entitled Evaluation of Hearing Function After Gamma Knife Surgery of Vestibular Schwannomas.
First of all, I want to thank you for submitting your paper to Focus. I think it was a very excellent paper reviewing outcomes for radiosurgery for vestibular schwannomas, and particularly looking at this very interesting question of hearing preservation in patients who have good hearing to begin with. So related to that, I'll ask a series of questions. The first one is, what are the long-term tumor control rates for vestibular schwannomas after radiosurgery?
Well, you know, with late improvement with radiosurgery techniques in recent years, the control rate has really increased. And nowadays, if we just look at the literature, we can see tumor growth control rate ranging between 93 and 100%. This is a very common data in literature, especially in the most recent paper. What we found in our study, that we had a tumor growth count of 96%, which is in line with literature, and with also very good median follow-up with 38 months. What is also more very impressive in our opinion is that not only did we have a tumor growth control, but we had also, we proved a reduction of volumetric measures of the vestibular schwannoma, so we had 68%. So these are really important data supporting the use of radiosurgery for vestibular schwannoma, in our opinion.
Yes, I think it's very impressive. And how do you think that compares to the natural history of vestibular schwannomas?
Well, this, you know, it's a bit more difficult to assess. First of all, because natural history of vestibular schwannoma is not really clear at this point. This is due to the fact that in literature there is not really a straightforward opinion about what's the natural history. And we can see study supporting that vestibular schwannoma would never grow, and other study, on the other hand, showing a clear tendency of vestibular schwannoma to grow, of course. We cannot say for sure what is the different rate of hearing preservation outcome for the natural history. What we know for our study is that especially there are indeed in our study some prognostic factor that could help us in trying to understand which patient might have a deterioration and which patient might, on the other hand, preserve hearing function. So, for example, we saw that both patients in Gardner-Robertson class 1 retain functional hearing in a very high percentage. What we really miss, we think, in the literature is a study who can really, really tell us what is the hearing preservation rate if we just wait and see the natural history of a schwannoma. The problem mainly, in our opinion, is that really in literature you cannot compare really the studies of natural history that have been now shown. Just because the inclusion criteria are so different between the study in which patient undergoes some kind of treatment, whether radiosurgery or also surgery, and the study in which, on the other end, the patient are just conservatively managed. So this is the point that has to be pointed out in the future, in our opinion.
Right. So it's difficult to compare across studies that have different treatment criteria and selection criteria.
Yeah, it's really the inclusion criteria that you can see in literature for the studies who just manage conservatively this schwannoma. You cannot really compare them with those who have been treated. Just for example, most of the studies in which vestibular schwannomas were conservatively treated included patients, maybe older patients, for which, for example, follow-up is, of course, shorter and who have a lesser life expectancy, or patient who, for some reason, could not undergo a treatment. So you cannot compare really them with radiosurgical series.
Can you comment further on the rate of hearing preservation after radiosurgery? I know you said one of the prognostic factors was having class 1 hearing beforehand, but perhaps you can comment further on the rate and the prognostic factors for this.
Yeah, this is the date we found in our study, and which has also been confirmed by some of our studies in literature. And we've seen in our experience that patient with, as we said before, Gardner-Robertson class 1 pre-treatment hearing level are most likely to preserve it. So this might really be a very strong prognostic factor. And this might also suggest that an early intervention when hearing function is still good, if confirmed by further and larger study, might be an indication maybe for preservation of hearing function. Not only very important in our opinion, even if we really didn't do it in our study, would be the assessment of the marginal dose to the cochlea and to the inner ear organ. So especially the inferior basal turnover modulus would be maybe a point to assess. So which is the dose received by these very delicate organs. We should not forget, however, that our first aim to patients undergoing gamma knife treatment for these schwannomas is to assure a tumor growth control. And this is most likely to occur with single dose radiation. And so this is really the first endpoint which has really been assessed in all those studies. The hearing preservation, in our opinion, for what we can say for sure, based on our experience, is Gardner-Robertson class 1 preoperative level.
Again, you've already commented a little bit about this, but what do you think we can do to improve the rates of hearing preservation? I know you've already commented perhaps we should be treating patients earlier. What about in terms of stereotactic planning or other factors that might influence our outcomes?
Right, regarding planning, of course, maybe an advancement in imaging of those delicate organs like the cochlea maybe can help on this. And we think that maybe keeping a dose to the cochlea really lower than maybe 4 grays, 4, 5.3 grays might be advisable for this aim. For what regards planning, also a marginal dose of 30 grays has been shown, or lower of course, has been shown in the literature, and we also saw it, to be a good safe dose which can combine both tumor growth control and hearing preservation. So we must find a compromise between the first endpoint, which is of course always the mass control, the growth control, and the hearing preservation, as you said before. And this very precise marginal dose setting and a careful control of the dose to the most delicate organs.
One of the big questions that everyone has, and I think it depends on whether they do radiosurgery or open surgical resection versus management. So how do you think stereotactic radiosurgery fits into our modern-day treatment algorithms for these tumors? And specifically, how do we select people to treat, especially when we're seeing more and more incidental tumors?
Well, first of all, what we think we must point out is that gamma knife has been shown to be safe, efficacy and minimal invasive in the treatment. It's also very well tolerated by the patient, which is not, of course, the case of open surgery. According with the guidelines for the treatment of vestibular schwannoma, which have been approved by the International Radiosurgery Association, and we personally agree with these guidelines, we could say that gamma knife radiosurgery might be the gold standard for intracanalicular lesions, in whom, of course, it has been documented in on imaging, maximum diameter inferior to 3 centimeters, documented growth of schwannomas, and of course, no brainstem distortion. So in our opinion, and according also to the International Radiosurgery Association, really good points on which radiosurgery can be of help. But however, we cannot claim for sure that this might be the best treatment, since the best treatment for especially for an incidental tumor, is still a point of discussion. It's important, however, to underline how, according to our data and also to those published in literature, the treatment of this lesion could give a chance of controlling the tumoral growth with a percentage close to 100%. So this is what gamma knife can allow us, and also allowing, as we said also previously, very high rate of hearing preservation. If, however, tumor growth is documented by imaging, so if we can be sure that there is a growth of a tumor, this is a strong indication for radiosurgery, particularly for young patients and for those you can have a very long life expectancy, even in the case in which the initial tumor is very small or if patient have no symptoms. In any case, however, the decision has to be taken in the absence of clear guidelines with a patient, so we must give him a very importance to their life expectancy, as we said before, to the quality of life. And we must not forget, of course, also patient preferences regarding their attitude to surgery or to radiosurgery. We think it's also important to point out how sometimes hearing loss does not correlate with tumor growth. And if we wait too much, it might be impossible to maintain a good hearing. So that's really the matter why we suggest an early intervention. It would be, of course, very interesting to understand if there are significant differences in hearing preservation between patients treated with gamma knives and those treated with a wait-and-see strategy, as we said before. This is especially true for the incidentally discovered schwannoma. But now we are missing this data and literature, and only a prospective case control study could probably answer this question and help us in a more defined guidelines.
Perhaps I can ask something regarding the same topic a little bit differently. What types of patients would you use a wait-and-see policy on instead of doing radiosurgery to begin with?
Well, of course, if it's a very small schwannoma, asymptomatic, and maybe also old patients with no evidences of documented tumor growth. In those cases, you might want to wait and see, of course, which is the course. Of course, if there is a documented growth, you cannot wait, in our opinion. The real point of the discussion is what do we do with a young patient, so let's say 20, 30 years old, 40, with very small tumor and hearing preserved, so Gardner-Robertson class 1. This class of patients is the most delicate for which we really have to discuss what to do. So where we can have a really wait-and-see strategy, for sure, as we said before, the old patient, asymptomatic, and with no evidence of growth control. In the first case, as we said before, young patient, asymptomatic, hearing preserved, we think that in this case, in the absence of clear guidelines, maybe still the discussion with the patient is a very important topic.
Yes, absolutely. I think I agree. I think that's the most difficult group because there's long-term implications to either a wait-and-see policy or radiosurgical treatment because of the possible side effects. So it's a very difficult and challenging group to treat.
Yeah, we think it's really interesting because we think that this in some way was the sense of our study. We think that a precocious, a very early treatment can be really of help, not only for the growth control rate, which has been in the last year well documented, but really still for the hearing preservation. This really is a point that needs to be really further studied.
Excellent. Is there anything else you wanted to comment on regarding your study or the radiosurgical treatment of these tumors?
Well, actually, we did that study to answer to some of our questions that came out in our 15 years of practice with the treatment of this lesion. So we really do not have any special points, apart maybe, of course, we would be really curious to see if our results might be confirmed in the continuing of follow-up of patients that we have treated in our study, and of course in expanding the number of cases, because we must never forget the power of the statistic is what really gives us power to our conclusion. So this is what we plan to do in the forthcoming future.
Absolutely. Well, we appreciate your contribution very much, and I think these types of institutional experiences are very important for us to all share so we can further the care of all of our patients.
Yeah, we agree perfectly.
This concludes our podcast. Please join us in January 2010 for a discussion on neurogenomics and neuroproteomics. For information on how to submit your research or to view upcoming topics, please visit thejns.org and click on Call for Papers under the Neurosurgical Focus icon. You can send comments to jnspodcast@thejns.org, and you can also follow us on Twitter.